Here we are. This is Real World Radio on air. 3w.realworldradio.fm.
Okay, the theme of today is climate change, and we'll be discussing the Green Climate Fund, which is a mechanism initiated by the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. And this offers financial support in order to assist developing countries in terms of adaptation and mitigation practices to counter climate change. And based in the United States, we have Karen Orenstein from Friends of the Earth speaking with us today. Thank you, Karen, for joining us at Radio Mundial.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And first, I'd like to ask Karen, what has been your involvement with the Green Climate Fund thus far?
Oh, gosh. I've been working on it more or less since 2008, which is several years before it was actually formed. So I've been working at the level of the UN FCCC and also at some differing government levels to try to establish what we used to call a global climate fund, but now it's called a Green Climate Fund, that puts the needs of peoples in developing countries first and foremost when it comes to dealing with climate change, and to provide a real alternative to what was already out there, the World Bank, regional development banks, etc.
Okay. And 6 years ago, the Copenhagen Climate Summit set an ambitious goal to mobilize $100 billion a year for broader climate finance by 2020. And last year, the countries pledged $9.3 billion. Can you provide us with an update on the status of the fund this year?
Sure. So the $100 billion is supposed to be provided by developed countries for developing countries by 2020 annually. And so the money that goes towards the Green Climate Fund will be a portion of that $100 billion in 2020. But, and actually right now, currently pledged to the GCF is $10.2 billion total. So a little bit more than the figure you cited, because there's been some newer donations or contributions. I shouldn't use donations, but contributions. And of course, just the figure of $100 billion, we should be clear from the beginning, is just a political figure that then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton from the United States threw out in Copenhagen as a goal. It's actually not tied to science or to justice, so it's not needs-based. It's a nice round figure for politics, and even at that amount, which is well below the need, developed countries are well behind in contributing the $100 billion.
And in what way is the fund supposed to help these developing countries that are in dire need of it?
Well, in the idea is, and again, this is sort of the theory as opposed to the practice, is that money goes into the fund, and then the fund can give out. The fund, meaning the Green Climate Fund or the GCF, can then give funds for projects and programs in developing countries for adaptation, so to help people in developing countries adjust to the unavoidable impacts of climate change, and for mitigation so that they could reduce their greenhouse gas emissions and embark on clean development pathways. And it's supposed to be able to fund a whole range of projects of many sizes, from very small to very large, from policy level work to infrastructure. So it's different from, for example, some of the other international financial institutions, like, for example, the World Bank, in that the governance structure is half made up of half developed countries and half developing countries. And it's not the way the fund worked isn't based on weighted voting. So at the World Bank, the U.S. has a bigger vote because it contributes more money. That's not the case in the Green Climate Fund. Of course, also the Green Climate Fund is rooted in the UN Framework Convention. And one thing that's really important about the Green Climate Fund is that it is supposed to be divide the resources are supposed to go half for adaptation and half for mitigation, which is actually really important because adaptation gets far fewer resources than mitigation. And adaptation, of course, is a need that is more prevalent among the poorest and the most vulnerable, and it's also the least profitable. So that's really important.
Okay. And I did want to ask, how is the funding supposed to be handled? I mean, how does this money reach, those in the developing countries?
So they've just started the process, but basically there's meetings of contributors that pledge money, and then basically what happens is that there are entities that are accredited. So these could be public or private institutions, governmental, non-governmental, that the Green Climate Fund approves to basically receive and disperse the funds. So far they've approved 20 of them, and it is only those entities, at least for now, that are able to submit proposals for funding to the Green Climate Fund. And so some of the entities or institutions are things we'd like, ministries in Rwanda or Namibia. But some of them are institutions we really don't like. For example, the World Bank, or they've actually accredited Deutsche Bank, which is really top among the world's coal financiers, not to mention, not a great record on human rights, etc. So the current mix of accredited entities does leave a lot to be desired. And a key selling point and why a lot of us were excited about the Green Climate Fund is that it's supposed to really be pioneering in what's called direct access, which means that governments don't have to work through the World Bank, the Inter-American Development Bank, the Asian Development Bank, the African Development Bank, in order to access the funds. They're supposed to be able to access the funds directly. But if these entities that are getting accredited are themselves multilateral development banks or large private banks, then that leaves less space for, national entities like, Climate Commission in the Philippines or some other body to access the funds for the Green Climate Fund.
Okay. And are there any challenges that has been spoken about in terms of, for example, giving out these funds to, for example, Rwanda or countries within Africa or countries that have suffered from corruption, such as that? Has that been an issue?
Yeah, it's so not yet, but it could be. So two things. You raise an important point. First of all, just because a national entity like, a Rwandan ministry has direct access to the funds as opposed to just like the World Bank, that doesn't mean that it is going to be responsive or representative of the needs of the people of Rwanda. I mean, Rwanda might be fine. It's just a theoretical example.
Right.
But we can't assume, and I would rarely assume, that governments are actually representing well those in civil society, affected communities, etc. So this is why we actually need to have a lot of local and national civil society and community involvement in shaping what goes into the Green Climate Fund, what sort of proposals they get, the board gets. And as far as what's happened so far, I mean, just 2 weeks ago in Zambia, there was a board meeting where the first 8 projects were approved. So there's not any track record yet, though I will say that one of the projects that was approved could be problematic in that it's in an area in Peru with indigenous peoples, and there are big questions as to whether or not there was the right of free prior informed consent was actually respected. And it was done by a Peruvian accredited entity. It's a national entity, but that, again, here we have, a national entity, not necessarily maybe it is, but it might not be, respecting the rights of Indigenous peoples. So there are bound to be problems, but we just are in very early days still. So the record is not yet there. I can say that these projects were approved without all the necessary policies in place because there was a rush to get everything done before the climate summit in Paris. So there are many shortcomings still in the process and in the policies. And there's huge challenges with transparency. The GCF does have safeguards for environmental and social safeguards. They're interim and they're based on the safeguards of the World Bank's International Finance Corporation, or IFC, which is the private sector lending arm. And so those interim safeguards are themselves not that great. So there's all sorts of obstacles in the way. The GCF will probably do some good and some bad, but it's still very early on.
Okay. And it sounds a bit like it's going to be more of a trial and error kind of process, learning process, to see how this will develop and how it's going to go. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, well, they always talk about learning by doing, which is a phrase I think the World Bank coined, so it kind of drives me nuts. But there is something to that. And I was just going to say something, which is that this is an intergovernmental process. So even though many of the drivers behind the Green Climate Fund were, you know, activists, mobilizations, movements, developing country governments were behind it, at this point, you know, it's a very, you know, it's as high as you can get almost internationally, as far as it's government, people representing government sitting at a table trying to negotiate and agree on things. And so anytime you get to that sort of intergovernmental level, it's going to be hard to shape it into a progressive body. And that's sort of the nature of how these things are. If you look at, for example, the way the UN functions in other places, the General Assembly or the Security Council, particularly the Security Council, and in other UN bodies, it's sort of the best we have out there, but it's still flawed.
Absolutely. Okay, well, thank you so much, Karen, for the information you've provided us, and we really look forward to seeing what the UN Climate Change Conference in Paris is going to bring us this year. Yeah, absolutely. We look forward to, hopefully there'll be some positive developments, and it seems like this is a very bottom-up initiative rather than top-down, so we look forward to hearing about how the Green Climate Fund goes.
Thank you
again for speaking with us. I really appreciate it.
Real World Radio, broadcasting free words, building popular communications by Fowai.